just commenting. I like her shirt. Carol and I just started watching Downtown Arby's a while ago. And not exactly sure why at first. It's like, could watch paint dry. That'd be about the same. But it's British. Hubbub, ho, ho. It's good stuff. Yeah. Hey, welcome to Hope. My name is Steve. I'm one of the pastors here. As I've gotten older, I have enjoyed more and more and more movies that have redemption lines in them. And my boys and I, and Carol begrudgingly, so I'm going to speak to the dudes in the room. This is the bee's knees. Huh? This movie right here, Warrior. Now, if you're a little bit of, well, if you don't like cage matches and ultimate fighting, maybe not. But it's not really about that. It really isn't about that. It's this beautiful, beautiful story of an unbelievably messed up family that goes through this redemption. And it is messy. I mean, it is really messy. And you watch this thing unfold, and you watch these brothers, those two guys, Tom Hardy and the other guy that doesn't have quite the... man, this Tom Hardy is ripped. I'm telling you, I don't know if he had to get a sample for steroid use or what for this movie, but he's amazing in this movie. But and the other guy, who's the other guy? That guy, whatever you just said. And they're brothers, and it's a storyline of their strange relationship brought on by their father, Nick Nolte. And Nick, they all put in these amazing, amazing performances that bring you to this ending. And it's you know, not everything is perfect at the end, but there's this serious line of redemption in that is huge. We are closing out today the book of Genesis, and we are going to see a doozy of a redemption story. In fact, so much so that I knew this was kind of leading all to this, but man alive, my week has just been really full, and I knew that we had 9 chapters of Genesis to cover this morning. Ladies and gentlemen, do not try this at home. Leave this to the paid professionals. 9 chapters of Genesis we're going to hit through, and I thought, my gosh, when am I going to have time? And so finishing up before we had a party for the parents of the one of our youngest son's class last night. And so Carol's doing a visit. She works as home health care. And I'm out in the car working on this, sitting there in front of somebody's house in the suburbs, which I'm sure they're all freaked out about. And but I'm going through this, and this new thing hits me that I'd never seen before. I'd never seen it before. And so I am so excited to share this with you this morning. I'm not going to tell you right now, but it's just so cool, this redemption story. It's amazing. So if you got a Bible with you, open it up to Genesis chapter 41, and we're going to go all the way through chapter 50. We're going to finish up Genesis today. And so again, we say goodbye to an old friend. Genesis has become that to us. And this, of course, we've went through creation, beautiful accounts of creation. Spent a few weeks there. Talked about the fall of humanity and what that brought on. Went from there to Cain and Abel, and sin just starts becoming darker and darker and darker. We see this throughout the book. The flood comes in even. We start again with Noah and his sons. They mess things up right away, and it just kind of keeps going on and on and on throughout that. Then a bright part comes in, Abraham. He seems to be our guy. He seems to be a guy who will follow God no matter what. And then he even messes up, pimps out his wife a couple times just to protect his own hide. He brings a son into the world, Isaac. He does the same with his wife. It just seems like everybody has some major character flaws as we go through this. Isaac then gives birth to 2 children, or his wife does, Jacob and Esau, and the line is going to go through Jacob. Jacob is now where the 12 sons of Israel are going to come from, the 12 tribes of Israel. Actually, 13, we'll see that today. And they call it the half-tribes, but it's basically the Joseph's sons will end up being included in that. And we follow from the middle of, chapter 32 or so, all the way to the end of the book, it really follows Jacob and his line. And this family's messed up. And if you remember from a couple weeks ago, we looked at this whole deal where there is dysfunction in this family, and there's all these sons come from 4 different mothers. The mothers all have issues with each other. None of the children are born like a normal, well, what if there's such a thing as normal, but this idea of love and care between them, and this whole thing is just kind of messed up, and you get all these 12 kids, and there is serious dysfunction between them and this whole tribe. It's amazing. And what we saw in that week was how, in the midst of all of that, they decide to sell off the second to youngest brother, Joseph, into slavery. They're going to kill him, but then they decide there's no money in it. Judah speaks up and says, there's no money in this, so let's go ahead and sell him off. So they sell him off. And then in that, then last week we looked at how all this kind of stuff happens. First, we see in Genesis chapter 38, this amazing account. I can't even believe it's in the Bible, but it's in the Bible to just show us how messed up things are. Judah ends up taking his son's wife. His son died. He ends up taking his son's wife, who, I'll let you read it, who he thinks a prostitute. Then she's pregnant, but he doesn't know that it's her. So when he finds out she's pregnant, he says, burn her. Bring her out here and burn her. She's able to convince him indirectly that he's actually the father. And then Judah goes through a transformation. Now, we don't see it totally in Genesis 38. We're going to see it today, big time. Unbelievable. We're going to see it today. And so in Genesis chapter 38, we see Judah say, she is more righteous than I am. Because I was withholding my son from her and forced her to do this. It's a beautiful chapter in spite of being completely messed up. And today we see this crazy family, and we're going to see today this thing become a redemption story of a very dysfunctional family. Okay, so like I say, if you got your Bible open, we're going to go through 9 chapters. Now, it is painful, the things I had to leave on the cutting room floor. I commend you to read this. There's so many details and so many beautiful parts. And I know you're going to say, oh, you skipped over my favorite part. I'm sorry about that. I, in order to cover 9 chapters in the 4.5 hours we have for church today, I had to leave a few things out. And so in order to do that, we're going to kind of take some snippets, and I'll catch up to speed real quick within there. At the same time, this story is so beautiful. It's such a beautiful line of redemption that I am going to read a lot of passages to you today. So we'll have our Bible open. You'll be kind of going through it, same like we've been doing the last few weeks, maybe even a little bit more so today. So we'll go through it, and you got an insert. You can follow along. We'll do this in about 10 steps or so. Hopefully not as painful as the 12 steps of whatever kind of recovery, but it could be just as painful. So we'll see how it goes. So let's start this out. First thing, the background to this redemption is Joseph becomes the guy to the guy. He's not the guy, but he's like Biden. He's like the guy to the guy. He's one heartbeat away, okay, from being the guy, but he's not the guy. So here we go. We saw this last week. To get you caught up, Joseph's life, he gets sold into slavery. Boom, goes down. He becomes Potiphar's slave, a servant, and he rises to the top of that game. He becomes second to Potiphar. Potiphar is actually second in command to Pharaoh. So it's Pharaoh who's the guy, then Potiphar who's the guy to the guy, and Joseph becomes the guy to the guy who's the guy, okay? So then, Potiphar's wife wants to have an affair with him, and he doesn't want to, or he refuses. We hear he refuses. We think it's on noble grounds. And she tells her husband that he actually is coming towards me, not the other way around. He ends up in prison. When he's in prison, things start to look good. He's put in charge of the prison. 2 guys come down, share their dreams. They were in trouble with Pharaoh, the cupbearer and the baker. He interprets their dreams correctly. One of them's going to die. One of them's going to live. The cupbearer dies? Baker dies. Baker dies. Don't be a baker. Cupbearer lives, and he just says, just remember to tell Pharaoh about me because I did nothing to get here. The guy forgets, and so Joseph is in prison for 2 more years. Then Pharaoh has a dream, and it's also interpreted eventually by Joseph about feast and famine. 7 years of feast, 7 years of famine. He interprets that dream correctly. Things are looking good. He recommends to him, put someone in charge who can be the guy to you who will take care of all this. And in Genesis chapter 41, starting in verse 41, we find out that he chooses Joseph. So here we go. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, all the rest of 41 is kind of background, but you need to hear it. The Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. Bling. He had him ride in a chariot as a second in command. And men shouted before him, make way. Get out of the way. You know, all you got to do in a crowd, by the way, just say, lady with a baby. And it works. I do it all the time. Then they look around. Anyway, thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift a hand or foot in all Egypt. Pharaoh gave Joseph the name, here we go, it's only said once, Zephanath-Paaneah, and gave him Asenath, daughter of Potipharah. At first I read that as Potiphar. I thought, oh man, right back at you. But it's not. It's a different dude. Priest of On. The other guy was Off. To be his wife. And Joseph went throughout the land of Egypt. Okay? Joseph was 30 years old. How old was he when he went put in the cistern? Anybody? Very good. 17. Nicely. One person is in charge. There's a person with corn on their head up on the balcony. That is. That's a Hope Community First. I'm just going to tip my hat to the corn head. Okay, so he's 30 now. So watch this. Be careful. That's 13 years, okay? 13 years have passed since he's seen his family. He's 30 years old now. When he enters the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, then Joseph went out from Pharaoh's presence and traveled throughout Egypt. During the 7 years of abundance, the land produced really well. Joseph collected all the food produced in those 7 years of abundance in Egypt and stored it in the cities. In each city, he put food grown in the fields surrounding it. Joseph stored up huge quantities of grain, like the sand of the sea. It was so much that he stopped keeping records because it was beyond measure. Okay, now he's 37. Okay, do the math there. 7 years of feast. He is now 37. Before the years of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph by Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh. Firstborn is Manasseh. And said, it is because God has made me forget all my trouble. Manasseh means forget. All my trouble in my father's household. The second son he named Ephraim. And said, it is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. Fruitful. Okay? So, he's somewhere in the famine, or during the feast years, he has two kids. The first one he names Manasseh, second one is Ephraim. Okay, keep going. The 7 years of abundance in Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began, just as Joseph had said. So he's somewhere between 37, 38, 39, somewhere in there, as some of these events are going to start to take place. There was famine in all the other lands, but in the whole land of Egypt there was food. When all Egypt began to feel the famine, the people cried to Pharaoh for food. Then Pharaoh told all the Egyptians, go to Joseph and do what he tells you. When the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt. And all the countries came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe in all the world. So what's he doing? He's making bling for Pharaoh, big time, right? Because they prepared for this. Now, all that is really just background to what's about going to happen next. What's going to happen next is this will cause a reunion, all right? It's going to cause it. Up until this time, remember, he's around 37, 38, 39. Let's just make it easy. Let's just say it's 40, okay, so I can do the math. Then if he was 17, that's 23 years. He hasn't seen his family for 23 years, all right? And now they haven't sought after him. They haven't done anything to look for him. But this is going to cause a reunion. 42. We're going to look at most of 42 because it is so important. When Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, He said to his sons, I love this. What kind of bubbas were these guys? This is great.
Why do you just keep looking at each other?
That's exactly, you know, just sitting around there. I've heard that there's grain in Egypt. Go down and buy some for us so that we may live and not die. Then 10 of Joseph's brothers went to buy grain from Egypt, but Jacob did not send the youngest, Benjamin. Now, back up. Benjamin and Joseph are the brothers from Rachel, all right? So that's his favorite wife. Jacob was into ranking everything. If you don't believe me, go back and read how he ranked him when Esau was going to come and trash him. He ranks him up to be speed bumps to get back to Rachel and her boys. Everybody else is just going to be a disaster waiting to happen. And he does this. And he also has his favorite now. It's Benjamin. Now, this is interesting. Benjamin's now the favorite. The other boys were very jealous of Joseph being the favorite. And that's why they sold him into slavery. Now Benjamin's a favorite, but something else, it's going different here. Joseph's brother with the others, because he was afraid that harm might come to him, verse 5. So Israel's, that's another name for Jacob, sons were among those who went to buy grain for the famine in the land of Canaan, for the famine was in the land of Canaan also. Now Joseph was the governor of the land, the one who sold grain to all its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. Anybody paying attention the last couple of weeks? Anything? I'm a mumble jumble. Yeah, that's exactly right, whatever you just said. They bowed down to him to the ground. That's his dream, right? Then what's going to happen? 11 sheaves are going to bow down to me, right? But wait a minute, how many bowed down? 10. Not 11. So... this is the part of the story that hit me hard. It's like, well, you know what? At this point, Joseph could have just said, hey, yo, I'm your brother, right? But he doesn't do it. And he starts inserting these things, plots, two in particular, some subplots along the way, to kind of work at the family. And I never saw until today how strategic these little plots are. They are unbelievably strategic. So here's his first plot. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. All right? Where do you come from? He asked. So he's putting on this thing, and he's doing it for a reason. We're going to see that reason in just a little bit. Actually, it's all over the place. Where do you come from? From the land of Canaan to buy food. And verse 8, although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Okay, so this is happening at the same time. So you got to take verse 8 back up into verse 7 when he does this whole thing. Then he remembered his dream. So that's happening as he's doing this as well. He does the same thing simultaneously. He pretends to be a stranger, speaks harshly to them. He also remembers his dream. His dream says 11 are going to be there, not 10. So something he wants to do, that's to bring the 11th. There's one missing. There's also something else going on here, as we're going to see in just a minute. He says, you are spies. You've come to see where our land is unprotected or naked, as some versions say. Whoops. And then he says, no, they say, no, my Lord, your servants here came to buy food. We're all sons of one man. Your servants are honest men, not spies. No, he said to them, you have come to see where our land is unprotected. But they replied, your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father, and one is no more. Okay, so they volunteer that information right there. So then he says, it is just as I told you, you're spies. And this is how you'll be tested. He said there's a 12th brother. One's gone, dead. But surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of your number to get your brother. The rest of you will be kept in prison so that your words may be tested to see if you are telling the truth. If you're not, then surely as Pharaoh lives, you're spies. And he put them all in custody for 3 days. Now, Joseph says, he's an intelligent guy. obviously he's running all of the business opportunities of Egypt. So he's a smart guy. So this is a great negotiating piece. What do? You arrest them all. You put them all in prison for 3 days. Then you come back with a counteroffer or a little bit different. This is tricksy. This is good. Look what he says. Do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison, okay? While the rest of you go and take grain back for your starving households. But you must bring your youngest brother to me so that your words may be verified and that you may not die. This they proceeded to do. Okay? Now, let's read this and I'll talk. Verse 21 says, they said to one another, surely we are being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen, for that's why this distress has come upon us. Reuben then replies, told ya, right? I told you morons not to do this. Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood. They did not realize that Joseph could understand him. So Joseph's standing there hearing all this, but Joseph is a smart guy and he's speaking to them and he's using an interpreter. It says he was using an interpreter. They don't know that he knows everything that they're saying. He turned away from them and began to weep, but then turned back and spoke to them again. He had Simeon taken from them and bound before their eyes. Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain. And here's the tricksy part. Fill it with grain. Put each man's silver back in the sack and give them provisions for the journey. After this was done for them, they loaded their grain on their donkeys and left. At the place where they stopped for the night, one of them opened his sack to get feed for his donkey. And he saw his silver in the mouth of his sack. So it's like, wait a minute, what's this doing here? It says, my silver's been returned, he said to his brothers. Here, it's in my sack. Listen to this. Their hearts sank and they turned to each other trembling and said, what is this that God has done for us? So what's he doing? What's he got going on here? Why do this? He wants to see his brother Benjamin. What's the whole thing about the money? Bruce Waltke, in his commentary that I read in the front of some suburban home, which I'm sure was creepy, said this, and it hit me. He said, Joseph was putting them through a path of redemption and to see how they would respond to the exact same situation they had with him. They sold him off for money. They took the money. They were happy as a clam. Now Simeon's in jail. And Simeon's going to be in custody, and he's given them their money back. And they go back home. And in order to come back, it'll make it seem like they were thieves. And they'll be in trouble. They're going to have to risk everything to come back and get their brother. Plus, they're going to have to bring the other one. Joseph is setting this up for them to get full redemption. And for redemption for what they did to him. Part two. The redemption of Reuben. I may or may not have been hungry when I put this together, this slide. Best Reuben in town. Anybody? Anybody? The local. Thank you. That's the correct answer. Second best in town? Tilia. There you go. Yeah. Yep. Very good. I'm preaching now, so that's just truth. You can take that to the bank. As they were emptying their sacks, so we skip here to verse 35, just to save some time. They come back. They go back to Jacob. They're emptying their sacks. And now they realize that it's not just money in one of the sacks. Every one of them has this pouch of silver there has been returned. When they and their father saw the money pouches, they were frightened. Like, what is going on? They're going to think we're thieves. We're being framed here, right? Their father Jacob said to them, you have deprived me of my children. Joseph is no more, and now Simeon is no more. There's no way you're going to go back. And now you want to take Benjamin? Everything is against me. And Reuben stands up and says, you start to see this Reuben starts to grow up here as well. Then Reuben said to his father, now, just, I don't think this would actually happen, but at least he's making an effort here, okay? He says, you may put both of my sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. I know that's like, thanks. Want me to kill you, my grandchildren, whatever. But entrust him to my care and I will bring him back. But Jacob said, my son Benjamin will not go down there with you. His brother is dead and he's the only one left. If harm comes to him on the journey you're taking, you will bring my gray head down to the grave in sorrow. And he says, you are not taking him. End of story. But there will be a trip after all. There will be a second trip. The boys, it doesn't say, but we assume that they tried to plead with their father. There's no way to do it until the famine keeps kicking in more. Now, the famine was still severe in the land. So when they had eaten all the grain they had brought back from Egypt, their father said to them, go back and buy us a little more food. And now we're going to watch Judah. This is crazy. Remember, Judah's the one who is the one that comes up with the plan to sell off his brother. He's also the one who sleeps with Tamar and has a child through her. He's also the one that says, she's pregnant, she's guilty, burn her. And all this gets turned on him. And now something happens in Reuben's life. But Reuben said to him, the man warned us solemnly, you will not see my face again unless your brother is with you. If you will send our brother along with us, we will go down and buy food for you. But if you will not send him, we will not go down because the man said to us, you will not see my face again unless your brother is with you. Jacob, Israel, asked, why did you bring this trouble on me by telling the man you had another brother? Right? Because Jacob's deceiver means deceiver. Don't tell him this. And they flat out lie. The man questioned us closely. He did, but they just volunteered the information. You saw it there. About our family, is your father still living? And he did ask that at one point. And he asked him, do you have another brother? And I'm sure he did in the process, but they just said there were 12 of us and one died. 12, one dies, and there are 10 of you here. Well, it's a natural next question, but they forget that part of the story. We simply answered his questions. How are we to know, he would say, bring your brother down here? Then Judah said to Israel, his father, send the boy along with me and we will go at once so that we and you and our children may live and not die. I myself will guarantee his safety. You can hold me personally responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, I will bear the blame before you all my life. As it is, if we are not delayed, we could have gone and returned twice. In other words, we're just going to sit here and argue about this here, boy, or are we going to go? Jacob agrees to it. Jacob agrees to it. So they go on their way. They go on their way back. And now they realize they could be hunted as thieves. So they're freaking out about this on their way back. So that brings us to chapter 43. You got to skip down a few verses to verse 15. And so what happens here is Joseph sees them and he tells his servant that he should take care of them. Okay. And so there are now 10 of them come. Remember, Simeon's in prison and Joseph is the one. So there's a guy, you'll see him is called the man, or in one place it's called the servant, he said. But anyway, it says verse 15. So the man took the gifts and doubled the amount of silver and Benjamin also. Okay. So they're coming this time to pay back for the first time and pay again. They hurried down to Egypt and presented themselves to Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, take these men to my house, slaughter an animal, and prepare dinner. They are to eat with me at noon. The man did as Joseph told him and took the men to Joseph's house. Now the men were frightened when they were taken to his house. They thought, we were brought here because of the silver that was put back into our sacks the first time. He wants to attack us and overpower us and seize us as slaves and take our donkeys. Like, that's the biggest concern you'd have in this situation, but ain't taking my donkey. Anyway, so they went up to the steward. They went up to this Joseph steward and spoke to him, and they told him the story. They said, please, sir, we came down here the first time to buy food, but at the place where we stopped for the night, we opened our sacks, and each of us found a silver, the exact weight in the mouth of his sack. So we brought it back with us. We've also brought additional silver to us to buy food. We don't know who put the silver in our sacks. And you can just hear the guy saying, uh-huh. But it's not what he says. Joseph's let him in on the account. And he says, it's all right. Don't be afraid. Your God, the God of your father, has given you treasure in your sacks. I received your silver. That's a little hard to translate phrase there. It basically means payment in full. You have to pay anything. Payment in full. Then he brings out Simeon to them. Now, it's interesting. It's interesting because the arrangement Joseph makes at first is that if you bring Benjamin, you get Simeon. But here it's real clear that Simeon is brought out when the accounting is done. It's a redemption story for what happened. They risk everything for their brother. And Joseph says, through his steward, it's all good. It gets even better. It gets really better. There's a second plot. He's going to go after them even more. He doesn't just tell them, I forgive you, don't worry about it. He gives them these things in their life that they can hang on to and see as illustrations for the rest of their lives. Now, Joseph gave these instructions to the steward of the house. He says, here, we're going to do it again. Fill these sacks full of grain, as much food as they can carry, and put each man's silver in the mouth of his sack. Again, I'm not taking their money. Then put my cup, the silver one, in the mouth of the youngest one's sack, along with the silver for his grain. And they did just as Joseph, he did just as Joseph said. All right? So there is a special, very fancy, very expensive cup that he puts in the youngest one's pouch. He says, as morning dawned, the men were sent on their way with their donkeys. They had not gone far from the city when Joseph said to his steward, go after those men at once, and when you catch up with them, say to them, why have you repaid good with evil? Isn't this the cup my master drinks from and uses also for divination? And again, Joseph didn't do divination. That's something that was forbidden for Israelites. It's part of the ruse, part of the story. This is a wicked thing you have done. When he caught up to them, he repeated these words to them, but they said, why does my Lord say such things? Far be it from your servants to do anything like that. We've been brought back to you from the land of Canaan, the silver we found inside the mouths of the sacks. Why would we steal silver or gold from your master's house? If any of your servants is found to have it, he will die, and the rest of us will become my Lord's slaves. Very well, then, he said, let it be as you say. Whoever is found to have it will become my slave. The rest of you will be free from blame. Each one of them quickly lowered his sack to the ground and opened it. Then the steward proceeded to search, beginning with the oldest and ending with the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. At this, they all tore their clothes, which is the Jewish way of just mourning over this. You got to be kidding me. Then they all loaded their donkeys and returned back to the city. Joseph was still in the house when Judah and his brothers came in, and they threw themselves to the ground before him. All of them, all 11 of them. Joseph said to them, what is this you've done? Don't you know that a man like me can find things out by divination? What can we say, my Lord? What can we say? How can we prove our innocence? God has uncovered your servant's guilt. We are now my Lord's slaves. We ourselves are in the one who is found to have the cup. But Joseph said, far be it from me to do such a thing. Only the one who has the cup will become my slave. The rest of you go back to your father in peace. Now, what in the world is Joseph doing here? Why is he torturing his brother? It sounds like revenge. It's actually not. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. What he's setting up is the redemption of Judah. In the longest speech in the book of Genesis, Judah does something that no one else in the book of Genesis or no one in all of humanity had done that had been recorded. He says this, Judah went up to him and said, please, my Lord, this is Judah. This is Carlson graduate John who went to the prostitutes guy wants to murder someone. This is Judah. It's not a guy I'd want to be around. Right? It's Judah. He says, please, my Lord, let your servant speak a word to my Lord. Do not be angry with your servant, though you are equal to Pharaoh himself. My Lord asked his servants, do you have a father or a brother? And we answered, we have an aged father, and there's a young son born to him in his old age. His brother's dead, and he's the only one of his mother's sons left, and his father loves him. Then you said to your servants, bring him down to me so I can see him for myself. And we said to my Lord, the boy cannot leave his father. If he leaves him, the father will die. But you told your servants, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you will not see my face again. When we went back to your servant, my father, we told him what my Lord had said. Then our father said, go back and buy a little more food. But we said, we can't go down. Only if the younger brother is with us can we go. We cannot see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us. Your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. One of them went away from me. And he said, he has surely been torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. And if you take this one from me too, and harm comes to him, you will bring my gray head down to the grave in misery. So now, if the boy is not with us when I go back to your servant, my father, and if my father, whose life is closely bound up with the boy's life, sees that the boy isn't there, he will die. Your servants will bring the gray head of my father down to the grave in sorrow. Your servant guaranteed the boy's safety, my father. I said, if I do not bring him back to you, I will bear the blame before you, my father, all of my life. Now then, please let your servant remain here as my Lord's slave in place of the boy. It's the first time in the book of Genesis anybody offers their life for another person. Joseph's a genius. And let the boy return with his brothers. How can I go back to my father if the boy's not with me? Sorry. It's a powerful suburban moment when I sit me. No, don't let me see the misery that would come upon my father. Judah, selfish, money-grubbing, user of people, quick judger, Judah. And Joseph orchestrates this man's redemption. Joseph can't take it anymore. And he could no longer control himself before all his attendants. And he cried out, have everyone leave my presence. This makes me wonder. He says, I can't control it anymore. Many times, I skipped over this, but many times he has to leave and weep. When he sees Benjamin, he weeps. And all these different things happen. He can't do it. He comes back, cleans himself up, comes back, and is harsh to them again in the whole ruse to get this road to redemption. And it says he can't control himself any longer, which makes me wonder how many more schemes he had planned for their redemption. But it's like, I can't do this anymore. And he reveals himself. He says, so there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers, and he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him. Evidently, they're hard of hearing. And Pharaoh's household heard about it. He just starts weeping. Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still living? But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brother, come close to me. When they had done so, he said, I am your brother, Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now, big verse, 45 verse 5. And now, do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves. Are you kidding me? For selling me here. Because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. Now, we don't know how old Joseph is here. Let's just say 40, all right? That's 23 years. 23 years he could have been stewing about this, right? Talk about a messed up family of origin. That's a messed up family of origin. And for 23 years, he could have been stewing about it and being bitter on it. Instead, I'm sure he's wrestling with that. I'm sure he's wrestling with that at this exact moment. But instead, he sees how God is actually working in his life through these crappy circumstances. And he's the one that orchestrates their redemption back to him. Are you kidding me? For 2 years now, there's been famine in the land. For the next 5 years, there will not be plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then, it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household and ruler of all Egypt. Unbelievable. Does it matter that you believe that God's in control? Not even going to answer that question. It's unreal. Then, pick up some of the pieces. Next redemption part. Father and son are reunited. I realize he's a little older. This is too cute of a picture to not use. So they tell them to go and get your father, bring him along. Pharaoh says, I'll send carts, bring all the stuff, whatever. So Israel set out all that was his, and when he reached Beersheba, he offered sacrifice to the God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in a vision at night and said, Jacob, Jacob. He says, here I am. I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you into a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you, and I will surely bring you back again. And Joseph's own hand will close your eyes. Don't be afraid to go down there. Skip to verse 28 in chapter 46. And now Jacob sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to get directions to Goshen. That's where they're going to go to, a place called Goshen, where they can do their shepherding. When they arrived in the region of Goshen, Joseph had his chariot made ready and went to Goshen to meet his father Israel. As soon as Joseph appeared before him, he threw his arms around his father and wept for a long time. And then Israel says, now I'm ready to die. It's probably not the nicest thing to say when you first see somebody. Oh, boy, don't you bathe in Egypt? No, now I'm ready to die, since I have seen for myself that you are still alive. Beautiful. It's this beautiful story of reconciliation. And then it goes even further, that Joseph, on his deathbed, Jacob, on his deathbed, adopts Joseph's two kids. Sometime later, Joseph was told, this is chapter 48 now. We skipped through a few things that are really important, really fun. Joseph continues to make Pharaoh very rich in different things. The family moves into Goshen. Sometime later, Joseph was told, your father is ill, so he took his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, along with him. When Jacob was told, your son Joseph has come to you, Israel rallied his strength and sat on a bed. Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan, and there blessed me and said to me, I'm going to make you fruitful and increase your numbers. I'm going to make you a community of peoples, and I will give this land as an everlasting possession to your descendants after you. And it's interesting, the negotiation here. It's not even a negotiation. It's just a statement. Now then, your two sons born to you in Egypt before I came here, will be reckoned as mine. I own your kids now. They're adopted into my family. Ephraim and Manasseh will be mine, just as Reuben and Simeon are mine. They are going to be part of this clan. They're going to be part of the 12 tribes. They call them and the two half-tribes, so it's really 13. Joseph took both of his kids. You skip down to verse 13. Ephraim on his right toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh, because he's the older one, on his left towards Israel's right hand, and brought them close to him. But Israel reached out his right hand and put it on Ephraim's head, though he was the younger, and crossing his arms, put his left hand on Manasseh's head, even though Manasseh was the firstborn. Then he blessed Joseph and said, May the God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life to this day, the angel who has delivered me from all harm, may he bless these boys. May they be called by my name and the names of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and may they increase greatly upon the earth. Just going to go through this real quickly here, but Joseph sees that and says, no, you got that mixed up. You got your hands in the wrong place. And Israel replies back and says, I know, my son, I know. Your other son will be, the older will be a great people. Nevertheless, the younger brother will become greater than he, and his descendants become a group of nations. He blessed them that day and said, in your name will Israel pronounce this blessing. May God make you like Ephraim and Manasseh. Then, right before he dies, he blesses the 12 sons. And I'm just going to summarize this real quick for the sake of time here. I'm only going to go through three of them. Okay, first is Reuben. I'm just going to pick three because those are three we've kind of been following. Reuben, Judah, and Joseph. It starts off good, right? You're my firstborn, my might, the sign of my strength, excelling in honor, excelling in power. However, turbulent as the waters, you will no longer excel, for you went into your father's bed, onto my couch, and defiled it. Let's not do that, okay? Judah. The redemption story of Judah is so beautiful and so complete that Jacob blesses him and says to him in the beginning here, he says, Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons will bow down to you. You're going to be the one. If you skip down to verse 10, it says, the scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet. Judah now becomes the one that the line of David, Solomon, and ultimately Jesus comes through. It's through Judah. You get to Joseph, and Joseph gets also very blessed. A fruitful vine near a spring whose branches climb over a wall. And here he describes the situation that happened to him. And he says it very poetically. It says, with bitterness, archers attacked him. They shot at him with hostility. But his bow remained steady. His strong arm stayed limber because of the hand of the mighty one of Jacob. He saw what Joseph did in the redemption of this family and blessed him accordingly. Lastly, it says that Jacob then dies. It says, when he finished giving these instructions, which is about to take his body out of this land eventually and take it to the promised land, which they don't have yet, he drew his feet in the bed, breathed his last, and was gathered to his people. Joseph threw himself upon his father and wept over him and kissed him. Which brings us to now the fear. The fear of the brothers was this was just for dad. This was just for dad. Joseph's brothers saw that the father was dead, and they said, what if Joseph still holds a grudge against us? He says, so verse 16, so they went to Joseph saying, your father left these instructions before he died. This is what you are to say to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and the wrongs they committed in treating you so badly. Now please forgive the sins of the servants of the God of your father. When the message came to him, Joseph wept. Joseph cries a lot, okay? But this hits him. And he just replies back. When they come back to him, they say, we're your slaves. And Joseph says to me a very important couple of verses here, which is the theme and the big idea of the Joseph whole account. He says, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? He says, I know you intended to harm me. But God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then don't be afraid. I will provide for you and for your children. And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. It says then that Joseph stayed in the land of Egypt along with his father's family. He lived 110 years. He saw his third generations of Ephraim's children and second generation of Manasseh's children. And then he says, I'm about to die, but God will surely come to you, your aid, and take up you out of this land to the land he promised. Remember, they don't have the promised land yet. Given to Abraham, they're in Egypt. That's not the promised land. And he made the sons of Israel who are still living swear, or the relatives it could be, swear an oath and say, God will surely come to your aid, and you must carry my bones up from this place. So Joseph died at the age of 110, and after they embalmed him, he was placed in a coffin in Egypt. In Egypt. That's not the promised land, though. And that's the end. That's the last verse from the book of Genesis. So what are some themes that are further developed in the Bible? Just want to hit this. It's really beautiful. Two that bring. One is the theme of redemption. Redemption means to buy someone back. doesn't mean just to forgive them. It means to actually move in and pay a price for them and come and get them back into your life. And the other one is just clearly the sovereignty of God over these things. Redemption. Do you realize that this whole account gets all the people of Israel into Egypt? This whole account that we've been reading for 3-4 weeks here just really just gets everybody back into Egypt. And what happens in Egypt is, you read, you know, if you just flip your Bible to the next page, Exodus chapter 1, they became very numerous. Oh boy! And so a Pharaoh that didn't remember Joseph got in power and puts them all in slavery. And they're enslaved for 400 years. This whole account of getting them there is another example of God going to orchestrate something that's very similar to what happened. Except this time it's 400 years. When you get to the book of Exodus, God promises that he'll take them out. Say to the Israelites, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves of them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with a mighty axe of judgment. This is the words he spoke to Charlton Heston. This is what's going to happen. So if you see this story of redemption that happens in Genesis, which you think is on a large scale, is actually a small scale, brings them there. They increase. Now they're all under slavery. And there's this story that's about to happen where Moses is going to come and Ten Commandments and part the Red Sea, and they're all going to be taken out. That's awesome. That's just a small story. That's a small story for what's going to happen when Jesus comes on the scene. And Jesus is going to talk about the redemption that is unbelievable. All these other redemptions were just people moving towards you in a way that would help you to be redeemed back to them or in some way out of slavery or whatever. I'm coming that I'm actually going to free you from your worst problem. What? Genesis 3, this curse of sin in your life. And he says in Mark 10:45, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a what? A ransom to pay back, to redeem back many. I'm coming to do what? Not just redeem you out of political problems or personal problems or food problems. I'm coming back to get the very heart of the very heart of the problem, which is your sin problem with God. I've come to pay that back. No one else can do that but an infinite and holy one who could take the penalty for you. It's unbelievable. Paul writes about this in Galatians chapter 4. He says it this way, but when the time had fully come. Whew. Okay, so it seems like a long time Joseph had to be in prison. Well, that's nothing compared to 400 years. Well, this is thousands of years now until Jesus comes. And Paul says, I know. Isn't that great? It's like, no, it's not great. I want it now. Nope. Time was fully right. We knew it was right because it was December 25th, zero. Bingo, this is the day. But when the time had fully come, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under law, to redeem those under law that we might receive the full rights of sons. It's huge. Male or female, you get the rights of sons. You have to kind of leave that one as sons because it means you're the heir of everything. That culture. So because you're sons, don't get caught up in the gender there. Get caught up in the benefit. God sent the spirit of his son into our hearts. A spirit who calls out, Abba, Father, Daddy. So you no longer are a slave, but a son. And since you are a son, God has made you an heir. You've been redeemed. Ladies and gentlemen, you and I are all Judah. And God set forth this beautiful redemption story to pull you back home. Sovereignty of God. I know the sovereignty of God is a very problematic thing, especially when you're going through pain. I understand that. It doesn't diminish the reality of his sovereignty. In fact, it's the thing you hang on to. God, you can do something about this. Please do. Proverbs, a couple passages from Proverbs says, in their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes the steps. He's the one in control. Proverbs 21 says, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. He directs it like a water course wherever he pleases. Our God is sovereign over all things. When you get to Matthew, Jesus is teaching on this, and he says, listen, you're worried about all kinds of things. He says, are not two sparrows, you can buy them for a penny, yet not one of them, not a single sparrow, falls to the ground apart from the will of my Father, your Father. And even the very hairs of your head are all numbered, so don't be afraid. You're worth more than many sparrows. So I'm worth many pennies. So you are. God knows you. God knows your circumstances. He's intimately involved with them. That is meant to encourage you. Yes, it's problematic. Like, oh, how does that? Ick. Yes, God is there. That's, I'm hanging out of that. I don't understand all this. That's always what we say. Why? Why me? Why me and why not you? You know, I don't know. But I do know this. Romans chapter 8, and we'll close with this. Paul's teaching on this. He says the same way the Spirit helps in our weaknesses. Read from Romans 8 before, which says that this is in the context of extreme suffering, that it's this passage is written. And he says, we know the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We don't even know how to pray for these things, but the Spirit intercedes. Spirit himself intercedes for us with groans that word cannot express. And he who searches our hearts knows the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for the saints in accordance with God's will. And here it is. And I know it's overquoted. No, it's not. It can't possibly be overquoted. It can be flippantly quoted, but it cannot be overquoted. And we all know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purpose. It's interesting here. I've always seen the sovereignty of God in the scripture. It's interesting to me, though, that the Judah account here, or the Joseph account, primarily with Judah, made me realize that the sovereignty of God is inexplicably linked with redemption. It's just God knows what he's doing. He's pulling people out of murk, and he's doing that all the time. So as we close here, and I just want to ask you, what's God doing in your life right now? How could that be linked to redemption? Let's pray together. Father, your word is tremendous. You are tremendous. Just as alive as you were in the days when Joseph put his cup as incriminating evidence in ways that his brothers would find to be horrifying, and actually led to redemption for this family that never was a unit, ever, become solidified. So God, I just pray for people in this room. It might be their families. It might be other relationships. It might be that their life just feels like a train wreck right now. But God, I firmly believe that you are the God who delights in your sovereignty being displayed in redemption. So God, would you do that in this room? Would you give people hope so that they don't hang on to bitterness, but they look to you for hope and they say, God, I trust you. I don't understand it, but you're the one who's in control, and I trust you. Pray all this in Jesus' name.